නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ සම්මා වාචා භික්කවේ භාවිතා බහුලී කතා රාග විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති දෝෂ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති මෝහ විනය පරියෝසානා හෝති ඉති. Dear Dhamma friends, so we were discussing Janussoni Brahmana Sutta in order to, in a way, to get an idea about Noble Eightfold Path. So this incident actually has happened during the Buddha's time, where Venerable Ananda was on alms round in Shravasti, and at that time he has noticed a very beautiful horse chariot, and there one Brahmin called Janussoni was using a chariot which is entirely white. So the horses used were white, and the canopy was white, and the wheels were white, and the upholstering also white, and the people inside were wearing white color clothing. So likewise, the whole chariot was adorned with white color clothing and the other setting. So basically, people have noticed this and they were quite happy about it, surprised about it, and they mentioned that this is a kind of a divine vehicle. So this has noticed by Venerable Ananda also, and he has noticed the people's appreciation towards that. And once he returned back to the monastery, he then mentioned this to the Buddha, and he asked whether the Buddha can connect this kind of vehicle to the Dhamma. So that is the question that Venerable Ananda asked. And then Buddha said, "Yes, I can connect this with the Dhamma." And there Buddha mentioned this Noble Eightfold Path is the chariot, or it is the noble vehicle, the Dhamma vehicle, divine vehicle that is being used in the battlefield of this going across the samsara. So therefore, divine vehicle, Brahma vehicle, or the Dhamma vehicle is a synonym given for Noble Eightfold Path. Now we were already discussed two path factors, that is namely Sammāditthi and Sammāsaṅkhapa. We have completed that, and now I thought of discussing today about Sammāvācā. So Sammāvācā, as you all know, is in a way one kind of very interesting characteristic or skill that the human have. So when compared with the animal realm, so they don't have effective communication system. They may have a kind of a primitive way, but not to the level of the human. So human have this skill of communication, so especially using the words. But unfortunately, they are the ones again using these words inappropriately or in an unwholesome manner, so that they are accumulating a lot of demerit. Now, this Sammāvācā, Sammākammanta, and Sammāajīva are actually comes under the category of morality. So probably you can remember Sammāditthi and Sammāsaṅkhapa, that is the right view and right intention, comes under the category of paññā, the wisdom sikkhā, the wisdom training. The other three, now what we are trying to explain, Sammāvācā, that is the right speech, and then Sammākammanta, the right action, then Sammāajīva, right livelihood, are coming under the category of morality or the sila sikkhā. So under this section, so we have to therefore discuss a little bit about the importance of the morality. So basically, if we take from the kind of an outset, say now if one is practicing morality, if one is restraining oneself, especially say for example one is not killing animals and not stealing, not conducting any sexual misconduct, not lying, and not taking any intoxicants. Now such kind of a behavior actually have a tremendous impact on the public at large. Now whoever the people available outside, the neighbors, the say the other people who are associating also benefited, because they get some sort of confidence that this person is a good person. There is no harm to the society because he is an honest person. He's a kind of a humble person. So likewise, kind of a benefit is there in that sense to the society. That is in a way one kind of a social aspect. On the other hand, so when one is protecting such sila, so that becomes kind of a principle, or that becomes some sort of policy for one's life. You know, this mind actually is corrupted with various defilements, and time to time they are arising. And if we don't have any kind of a moral code or kind of any ethics, then we simply become a slave to whatever the thoughts coming up. So those thoughts may be very vulnerable, very, say, harmful to oneself and the others. If we simply start to act according to them, it is quite harmful to ourselves and to the others. So if we are kind of abide by certain ethics, or abide by certain code of ethics, this moral conduct, then actually we are kind of restricted in our behavior. It's, we can feel it is kind of a restriction, because the mind may ask various things, but we are not allowing it to act according to it, because we are now constrained by certain ethical code. Now in that sense, actually we are no more a slave to the internal defilements. Rather, internal defilements may still available, but we are in a way restraining or restricting ourselves. So that is also another benefit that we can see, but not yet to the supreme level. And then on the other hand, if one is behaving like that, so not only in the present birth, in this life, there is a benefit to the other lives as well, to the future lives as well. According to the Dhamma, if one is moral, maintaining some good ethical conduct, so that leads him to have a very good rebirth in the future lives. That is also a kind of an unseen benefit, but according to the Dhamma, that is also there. And on the other hand, if one is going to develop one's, say, spiritual capacities, say one's own good qualities further and further, so this morality becomes kind of a foundation. Say for example, if you are kind of a building, want to build a huge construction, a building, so you need a very strong foundation for that. So morality acts like a such foundation for us to develop samadhi and the panya. Samadhi is the concentration, panya is the wisdom. So we can't build this sort of advanced spiritual qualities without having moral foundation. So therefore morality acts like the sila visuddhi, where the purification of sila, the morality, acts like the foundation for the further development of other necessary qualities. So in that sense, if we are moving forward to the higher spiritual development, so there the morality acts like the foundation. So in that sense, we can see that morality becomes kind of a prerequisite to continue our path. It doesn't mean that we have to complete the morality, that means we have to achieve 100%, coming to the 100% purification, then only we are able to start the samadhi practice or the wisdom practice. It doesn't mean that. Rather, we can start from where we are, but we should have a kind of a honest direction towards the purification of the sila, morality. Then actually it is really helping to the development of concentration and the development of wisdom. They in turn actually help further to develop sila. So they three, actually the sila sikha, samadhi sikha and the panya sikha, are quite interdependent. They are helping each other. So therefore one helps the other one to further develop. Now when it comes to typical teaching of the Buddhas, so that's a very famous Dhammapada verse, sabba papassakaranam kusalassa upasampada sacitta pariyodapanam etam buddhana sasanam. So Buddha mentioned that avoid doing any evil deeds, and conduct wholesome deeds, and then purify one's mind, and this is the teaching of the Buddhas. So in that sense, the sabbapapassa akarana, restrainment in the all unwholesome activities, and then kusalasya upasampada, conducting wholesome activities, become kind of an integral part of Buddha's teaching. Now, in that sense, sila also has kind of two categories, where the first, we need to avoid any unwholesome deeds, sabbapapassa akarana, that is the varitta sila, and then we have to further improve ourselves in the sila, so that is called the charitta sila, or the performance side. So these two actually we can recognize when we are discussing sila. And again, there is an interesting incident happened during the Buddha's time. Once one bhikkhu came to the Buddha and asked, Bante, I want to go to the forest, I want to become secluded and to practice the Dhamma. So please give me a kamatthana, please give me a meditative instruction. So at that time, Buddha just say, I mean, all are coming after me, asking individual instructions. And so Buddha just make a kind of a little note so that in a way this monk's enthusiasm may grow. It's kind of an marketing, we can say. Anyway, this monk now again request, please Bante, give me an instruction. So I want to become secluded and to practice the Dhamma so that I too will be a person who is inheriting the noble teaching. So then Buddha give a very beautiful instruction. There Buddha mentioned, Adimeva visodehi kusalesu dhammesu. So that means you got to purify the very starting of wholesome states. So just before whatever you do, you got to purify the very starting of the wholesome deeds, wholesome states. So then Buddha asked, Kocha adi kusalanam dhamman. So what is the very starting point of this wholesome deeds? Silancha suvisuddham ditticha ujuka. So the purified view and the purified or the straight morality. So you can see the sammaditti and the sila therefore becomes kind of a starting point of the whole practice. So this is also a very interesting point Buddha highlight here. And then Buddha mention, silancha suvisuddham bhavissati ditticha ujuka tato tvam bhikkhu silang nissaya sile patitthaya chattaro satipatthane tividhena bhaveyasi. So basically Buddha mentioned, so while keeping the right view and then the foundation of the morality, then you got to further keep in that as a requisite or as a foundation, you got to further develop the four types of satipatthana, foundations of mindfulness. So you can see the foundation of mindfulness is developed while keeping morality as a kind of prerequisite, as a foundation. So on top of that, we are building the four satipatthana. So therefore, in order to develop satipatthana, so one has to be a little careful about one's morality. So you can't simply neglect morality and simply say that I am too concerned about meditation, I don't care about morality. You can't say like that. Actually, we already discussed about this Sati Sampajanya Sutta. So there again Buddha highlight that if one is developing mindfulness and clear comprehension, so as a result of that, gradually your morality also has to be developed. So it becomes kind of a result of the development of mindfulness and clear comprehension. So whatever the approach you take, so sila becomes one important aspect of one's practice. Now, when it comes to Mahachattarisaka Sutta, as I shown in this diagram, so this Samma Vacha, right speech, also twofold. So one aspect is the affected by taints, partaking of merits, and then ripening in acquisitions. So that is where Sasava Punya Bhagya Upadi Vepakka. So there is one kind of Samma Vacha, right speech, which is sasava, which is of course with some taints, but punya bhagya, it is partaking of merit, and upadivepakka, and it is also providing various positive assets or wealthy assets or acquisitions. So this is the, we can say, the mundane type of samma vacha. And there is the other type, that is the supramundane. So that is Buddha mentioned, Arya, Anasava, Lokuttara, Magganga. So noble, taintless, supramundane, and factor of the path. So we are, therefore, when we are discussing samma vacha, we have to deal with both these aspects. So let's first of all try to discuss the first aspect, that's the mundane type of samma vacha. Now, in order to understand what is samma vacha, we need first understand miccha vacha, what is the wrong speech. So this is also kind of a known fact, so common information, already known popular information, that is miccha vacha is musavada, that is the false speech, and then the pisuna vacha, malicious speech, parusa vacha, harsh speech, and sampappalapa, that is the gossip. So these four are considered as miccha vacha. So therefore we need to have some idea about this miccha vacha, wrong speech, when we are discussing samma vacha. So let's briefly discuss about musavada, the wrong, this false speech. Now actually when we are discussing false speech, it has become somewhat widely available in nowadays. So people are used to lie, people are used to use this false speech, and it is spreaded in all the layers of the society. It is not limited to any kind of a society, but it is widespread in all the levels of the society. It has become kind of a norm of the society. So people are lying, people are cheating, and people are deluding others. So likewise, there are many ways of false speech widespread. Now actually in the past people didn't have much ways to implement it, but nowadays they are very creative and they are using those creative abilities to cheat others, to mislead others. So therefore it is very difficult to understand even what is the correct thing or what is the wrong thing, or what is the right thing, the true, and what is the false. It is very difficult to even understand. So you need to have very high wisdom, or to have to associate another person for a long time in order to recognize whether this person is a liar or whether this person is a true person. Therefore people are not concerning about these aspects, so they rather, for their easy say progress, they are simply using lies. Now when we are considering the Buddha, so whenever actually when he has decided to become the Buddha as a Bodhisattva, you know that he has spent eons in fulfilling the paramis, the perfections, so that is a long period of time. So it is said, so during this long, long time, there are certain mistakes that he did. Sometimes, say, killing, sometimes, say, sexual misconduct, sometimes even the stealing, and sometimes taking intoxicants. So this rarely has happened. But he has never done false speech. So that is one interesting characteristics of the Bodhisattva. So this is highlighted in the Dhamma. So because he is aspire to become the Buddha, and one important aspect of the Buddhahood is the realization of Four Noble Truths. So they are the truths. So if one wants to realize the truth, so one should never lie or mislead or cheat. So therefore Buddha mentioned, and in his character, so there are still certain other mistakes have happened during the as a Bodhisattva, but this lying has never happened. So this is something kind of a good example that we can take from the Buddha's character. Now if we actually have to commit false speech, there are certain factors to be fulfilled. So that is also sometimes necessary to understand, because sometimes we have certain doubts whether I really lied, whether I really have cheated. Sometimes doubts happen in the mind. Probably something has mentioned without any kind of an intention. But later we might have a kind of a doubt whether I really lied to a person. On such situation, knowing the proper factors, how the lying happened, is also useful. So there it is mentioned in the Dhamma. So when we are lying, so either we have to say what is available as not available, or what is not available as available. So this kind of a complete misrepresentation has to happen. And again, we have to have an intention that we should lie to another person. I have to cheat that person. I have to mislead that person. So that kind of an intention also has to be there. And again, there should be a way of doing it. Say either you are doing it through writing, or you are directly speaking out, or you are using your kind of a bodily sign to lie, to cheat the other person. So likewise, there are many different ways of lying, and you may have to use one of those strategies. And as a result of implementing that such strategy, such method, the other person get misled. So these four factors have to be fulfilled if we have to commit the false speech. Now, Buddha actually has really condemned or lying, and especially when he is instructing the other monks, so he has categorically mentioned that we should never lie, even if the life is under threat. So one has to be truthful. And in one occasion, Buddha approached Venerable Rahula. So he was a young samanera, young novice, and Buddha mentioned that actually what has happened was, when Buddha went to see Venerable Rahula, so he prepared a seat and then washed the Buddha's feet, and there's a little water available in the vessel. And that highlighting, Buddha mentioned a person, actually a monk, who is lying, is only having very little recluseship as a monk. Now, it is not a filled vessel, but only a very little water is available there. So something like that, Buddha mentioned, the person who is lying has a very little qualities, has a very little recluseship, monkhood. And then Buddha asked to throw away even that little water. And then he mentioned that the person, the monk who is lying, is like a person who has thrown away the recluseship. And again, after that, Buddha asked Venerable Rahula to turn the vessel upside down. And then he mentioned the monkhood or the recluseship is like upside down of a person who is lying, who is not caring of the truthfulness. And again, once showing the empty vessel, Buddha mentioned that the recluseship is hollow and empty of a person who is lying. So likewise, Buddha, using various techniques, examples, instructs Venerable Rahula to speak the truth, not to lie ever. So likewise, so there are many instructions given to Venerable Rahula in order to put him in the correct track, to avoid any false speech. And if we reach malicious speech, so that is the pisunavacha. So sometimes people see that certain family is doing well, and they are quite harmonious, they are very peaceful, and they are in concord. So sometimes probably certain people become envious about it, and they want to divide this particular family. And there may be a group of families, they are quite friendly each other. Sometimes people want to divide them, and there may be certain villages or cities or even several countries, they are quite friendly. So certain others want to divide them. So this kind of a malicious intention is there in the Pisuna Vacha, or the divisive speech or malicious speech. And therefore the one requisite is that there is a kind of two people or several people or several villages, countries are in kind of in concord, and that is one requisite. And then the other person is getting an intention to divide them, and as a result of that, he is using kind of a mechanism, either using one's own speech or you through writing or whatever the way. So that is also there, and then he implement it, and as a result of that, those peaceful family get divided. Those family or people who are quite friendly become now kind of doubtful about each other and even get into quarrel. So likewise, this malicious speech actually divides the others. And when it comes to parusa vacha, harsh speech, so that is where one is sort of using some abusive language to insult another person or to scold another person. So likewise, one is using some harsh speech. Actually, it doesn't mean every time that one is using the, say, very, say, bad words. One can even use soft words, but the result could be extremely harmful. So therefore, it is not the words that really use, but the meaning, the way he is putting it, really hurts the other person. So therefore, sometimes people use some sarcastic way of speech. So that also becomes this kind of a harsh speech. And then the sampappalapa, the gossip, is another aspect of the wrong speech, the michcha vacha. So nowadays it has become a kind of a, what we can say, kind of a tradition in the whole society that people are wasting their time just by gossiping. So if we consider the television, if we consider the radios, if we consider the social media, newspapers, everywhere, it's a way of wasting of one's time. So there are tremendous amount of information available, and we don't know whether they are important or relevant, but we are simply going through them, we are browsing those information, and ultimately we actually have lost several hours by going through it. Say you are logged into YouTube and one after the other they are popping up this and that, and going on and on, several hours were wasted in going through that. Say you are onto the Facebook and you are going on and on, several posts are there, so you are writing this and that, it's a waste of time. So likewise, nowadays this gossiping has become kind of a business that people are using to attract others and to waste their time. So therefore, this gossiping is also Buddha sort of condemned, that it is not contributing to one's benefit, and it's a waste of time and harmful to others as well as to oneself. Now these are the points that we need to first understand, that when we are discussing Samma Vacha, so what I have mentioned is the Michcha Vacha, the wrong speech. Now when it comes to Samma Vacha, so the opposite is there. So one assume that, say you are in this Michcha Vacha side, say there you are not too concerned about the you are not concerned about the speech, and you later understood, okay, I have to use correct speech. Now it's a kind of a turning point in your life. So this is the mundane type of Samma Vacha. So now you are getting to the what you call the afflicted by taints, partaking of merit and ripening in the acquisition. So now you are coming to the mundane type of Samma Vacha. Previously assume that you are using lying, divisive speech, say malicious speech, this gossiping, abusive words, all these things you are using. But now, as a result of you get to know that these are not good, these are harmful to myself and to the others, now you decide, okay, I need to restrain. So this is where the mundane type of samma vacha come into the picture. Now you are actually trying to be a good person. You want to be a person who is using correct language. Now the personality view is there, doesn't matter, but you want to change yourself. You want to change the attitude with others. You want to change how you are speaking. So this is a kind of a necessary step that we have to take. So you can't immediately go to the noble side or the supramundane side unless you are well established in the mundane side. So as we discuss in the Sammaditti. Now here also in Sammavacha, so therefore first of all we have to establish ourselves in the mundane side. In the mundane side we have to be a good person who is using the speech in the proper manner. Now there Buddha mentioned Sammavacha Sasava Punya Bhagya Upadive Pakka. So what is the correct speech which is in the meritorious or wholesome side, partaking in merit, and again the bringing acquisitions, but in the taint with taints, by the way. So that is the Musavada Veramani. Now you are trying to refrain from lying or false speech. It's a kind of an abstinence from the false speech. Now you want to abstain from false speech. Now you are trying. You are not using false speech. Rather, now you are using the right speech. And when you are talking, so you reflect what I am talking. You reflect and talk rather than simply allowing the mind to implement whatever the wrong speech. Now you are little considerate about how you are speaking. What is the content? So in this manner, you are trying to restrain your speech and therefore one become kind of a true speaker. Always trying to tell the truth, not lying. So therefore Buddha mentioned, Pachavekkhitva, Pachavekkhitva, Vachi Kammam Kātabba. So one has to, Vachaya Kammam Kātabba. So one has to reflect and then only one has to speak out. And as a result of that, one is now trying to purify one's speech. So in a way, now you are a little considerate. You are taking the responsibility of what you speak. Therefore, you are careful of what we are speaking. As a result, Buddha mentioned, so here one is practicing Sammavacha still in the mundane level. But doesn't matter, one is now trying to use the correct speech, right speech, now here in the being a truthful person, speaking out the truth. And then assume that someone is asking whether you have seen it. If you have really seen it, yes, I have seen it. And on the other hand, if you haven't seen it, there you mention it, I haven't seen it. So likewise, so whenever you are being questioned or whenever the opportunity is given to speak, so you are now speaking the truth, never going to lie or never going to cheat. Even with the presence of another person or with the absence, you are kind of honest and developing honesty, and now you are trying to be truthful. And on the other hand, if we come to the Pisunaya Vacha Veramani, now you are trying to abstain from the divisive speech. So rather than trying to divide other people, say friends or whoever the people who are in concord, now you are trying to promote the peace. You are now trying to promote their, say, cohesiveness. You are not doing any kind of slanderous speech. Rather, you are now trying to abstain from it and you promote the peacefulness. You encourage it. And if people are divided, now you are trying to concord them. You are now trying to connect them. You may doing that kind of a mediation in order to develop peace among others. So now you are changing your character. So rather than becoming envious by seeing someone is in concord, now you are happy about their concord, happy about their peace, happy about their friendship. And if someone is divided, now you are trying to promote the friendship, you are now trying to promote the peace, and you are now promoting that and trying to connect them. So now the attitude has completely changed. Now then parusaya vacha veramani. So we are, instead of using abusive language, harsh speech, you are now using soft speech, soft spoken. And here actually sometimes we have to respect others' viewpoints, we have to tolerate others' viewpoints, we have to be sort of patient. And if we have to communicate, we have to use the words in a diplomatic manner without hurting others, how we are putting across our idea. So these things I have to be concerned. So rather than immediately disturbing and hurting others and putting our words, how about diplomatically transferring our diplomatically saying our word? So these are certain things that we have to be careful, and this is how now we are considerate about our speech. So we concern whether my speech hurt another person. So you are a little concerned about it, and as a result you may be soft spoken. And on the other hand, you are doing it at the right time, and you are using always something useful, and that is also not hurting another person. And when it comes to sampappalapa veramani, avoiding of gossip, so there you are careful about how you are using your time and how you are using your speech. And you are careful whether it is wasting of time. So you are considerate about how you are speaking out. What is the content? So if you feel that the content is not useful, then one is simply be silent. And here actually Buddha mentioned Kalavadi, Bhutavadi, Atthavadi, Dhammavadi, Vinayavadi. So that all indicates that now you are using your speech at the correct time. And only with something available or something factual. And then what is useful, attavadi, it is with meaning. And then dhammavadi, it is according to the dhamma, good and bad. So you are always in the correct side. And again vinayavadi, now it is according to the discipline. Nidhanavating vacham bhasita hoti. So you are, whatever the thing that you are talking is really useful. It's like a treasure that there is nothing to waste. It is really helpful to the others, and they are therefore benefiting from your speech. So likewise, now the speech has become fairly refined, and you are quite considerate about what you are speaking. So likewise, now you are turning your speech into correct speech. Now when we are turning like this, now we can get on to the supramundane side. So there Buddha mentioned, you become more and more considerate about the correct speech. We already discussed, now it is not that we are neglectfully talking. In when it comes to the supramundane aspect, so Buddha further emphasize it. So arati virati pativirati veramani. So previously we were simply used musavada veramani, pisunavacha veramani, parusavacha veramani, sampappalapa veramani. So basically one is abstaining from lying, abstaining from divisive speech, abstaining from false speech, abstaining from harsh speech, abstaining from gossip. Buddha further emphasize it, and there again Buddha meant arati virati pativirati veramani. So that means you are too extremely careful about how you are speaking, and basically you are trying to kind of avoiding, restraining, abstaining, and quite considerate about what you are talking. Actually this is so concerned about the person who is in the practice, because you know, if you spend lot of time in speaking, simply in idle chattering, so once you come to your cushion, then definitely you will suffer there, because mind is again and going involved in that previous chatter, and it's very difficult to concentrate, very difficult to establish mindfulness, because you were in an idle chatter and mind has involved in that. And even after coming back to the sitting, coming back to the mindfulness practice, you understand, okay, mind is fairly distracted. Suppose you hurt another person. So once you come to your practice, you feel that. You feel that I have hurt another person. So that person has suffered. I should have restrained myself. I should not have mentioned that. Probably I might have further investigated the situation, but I was too hurried to mention that. So likewise, you feel some sort of a regret when you are misusing your words, when you have made a mistake through the speech. So likewise, you become more and more considerate, more and more sensitive when you are in the practice. Now you are not kind of a person who is simply blame another person and then enjoying it, and then sort of you can ignore it and forget it. Now you are a person who are quite considerate, and you are becoming more and more sensitive. As a result of that, even a slight mistake really hurts you. So that is actually, we have to take in a positive sense, that we are in a way now trying to become good people, good human beings. So that is where Buddha mentioned, anumattesu vajjesu bhaya dassavino. Even the slightest mistake, you find some sort of a fear. So likewise, you are refining the morality. So this is one important aspect of the Dhamma. So you are not simply stagnating at a particular level. Rather, slowly, slowly, you are refining your sila, refining your concentration, refining your wisdom. Likewise here, so if you do even a slight mistake, so when you are coming to the sitting practice or walking practice, you get distracted because of that mistake. So therefore, you are more and more considerate. Not to waste your time in gossiping, not to waste your time in the, say, lying or divisive speech or any of those. So you are now always trying to be truthful. So that is where we are in the supramundane side. So it is noble, supramundane, it becomes a, what you call this, path factor, and it is taintless. And further and further as you are improving in the Dhamma, so you will understand, okay, it is not that I am kind of doing right speech, I am doing, correct speech. It's a kind of a cause and effect relationship is going on. So it's a matter of developing these path factors. So likewise, you become sort of a person who is not encouraging personality, rather you are trying to develop morality. Through morality, you are not trying to develop a person. Rather, you are developing a good moral conduct so that it is beneficial to the further development of the concentration and wisdom. So there Buddha mentioned the not only right speech, so you get proper direction from right view, and right mindfulness is there, always monitoring your mind, whether you are going to do right speech or wrong speech. So that's monitoring side, or the observation side is there through the right mindfulness. And right effort is there, that you are always trying to avoid wrong speech and to implement right speech. So therefore Buddha mentioned, this right view, right effort, and right mindfulness are always going hand in hand with the right speech. So as I shown in the diagram, so you can see in this left side, so I have indicated right view, right effort, and right mindfulness. So they are always go hand in hand with right speech. Actually, they are going along with right view, right intention, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So all these path factors are combined or going together with these three path factors, right view, right effort, and right mindfulness. So this is where the Noble Eightfold Path become kind of a cohesive structure. So one is helping another, one factor is helping another factor. And as I mentioned, so when it comes to right speech, say one is now vigilant about what one is going to speech, so that is right mindfulness side, and always given the proper direction, okay, I should speak the truth, not the lying. So that kind of a proper direction is there. And I should never speak divisive manner or dividing another person or in a malicious manner. Rather, I have to always promote peacefulness, concord, unity. And again, I should never gossip. So likewise, the correct direction is there. So that is the aspect of right view. And then one is always using the effort to avoid wrong speech and to implement the right speech. So therefore, this right view, right mindfulness and right effort are always working together with right speech. So therefore, Buddha mentioned in this, when it's coming to the supramundane aspect of the sammavacha, the other three, another three path factors are also going to helpful. So I think as a starting of the right speech, I feel it is enough for today. So we can further discuss about the noble, taintless, supramundane path factor of right speech on the next week as well. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I open the session for questions.
Those who are new to this session, you can ask your questions by raising the hand in the available non-Zoom, or you can send it directly to me to chat.
So today actually Jennifer has gone for a retreat and therefore Shalika is taking the front. So if you have any question, you can actually ask. Today anyway, the lesson is more or less something you are already familiar with. So there is nothing much new here. But anyway, for the completion, I have included everything. And next time actually we can further discuss the same and more into the supramundane side. Yeah, there is a question. Yeah.
Pante, there is a written question. He is singing a song. Why it's called Idle Chatter?
So probably Shalika can answer because you are a good singer.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it's in the back of my mind. There's it's going in the background. So I can concentrate on what I'm doing. So that is what all I can say.
Yeah. So actually, this is something that we have to gradually let go. So even I feel that sometimes even while eating, my mind is singing. So it happened to me as well. So I have to gradually restrain. So if you completely cut off everything immediately, then it is kind of sometimes detrimental to the mind. Because the mind has to be in a positive side rather than become depressed. So you have to be joyful. So this joyfulness, happy state of mind is something useful even for the meditation. Only thing is, if it is continuously speaking out, or if it is continuously involved with inner chatter, or if it is continuously singing, so then you need to avoid it when it is necessary. Say for example, say you are now want to practice anapanasati. Still say, assume your mind is singing. So at that time you have to slowly bring your attention again and again to the breath and allow that singing side to fade away so that your mind becomes silent. Say, assume that you are you got a kind of a bad mood. At that time, if you are able to recover from that bad mood by even singing to yourself, I feel that is beneficial, because rather than bog in the bad mood and get depressed, so rather you sort of sing a song or kind of something and you come back to the joyful side is quite beneficial. Later, actually, once you are recovered, you can stop singing or whatever the mechanism. So therefore, always if you are able to keep our mind in the positive side, that is quite beneficial. And Buddha also has mentioned that in the Metta Sahagata Sutta, yeah, Buddha mentioned Subha Paramaham Bhikkave Metta Cheto Vimuttin. So this, especially the Metta, the loving kindness, giving that loving kindness practice, giving that positive aspect to the mind. So always having such
positive aspect in the mind is quite useful. And that is the problem. Today, actually, if you look at various news, newspapers, and social media, so all available are something negative. Always people are talking about the depressive side. So the whoever going through it also become depressed, also become negative. But on the other hand, we need to develop the positive side. Rather, the mind has to be in the positive side. Then only you can actually progress. So therefore, if you are enjoying some sort of an inner singing and you feel that it is giving you some say joy to yourself, and you can make use of it under your control. And if you feel that it is overwhelming you and you can't stop it, then there is the time that you have to find out other mechanism, say meditation practice, to calm down. So therefore, it has some positive side as well, but you have to have some control. Actually, probably you can remember when we were discussing Samma Sankappa, we discussed that when it is necessary, we can think. And when it is not necessary, we can stop thinking. So that is the controllability one has to develop in one's thinking, one's intention, one's thought. So similarly, here also, right speech, maybe in the singing, say whenever necessary, you do it. But when it is not necessary, you have a completely silent mind. If you have such skills, then actually you can be benefited. Yeah. Yeah, someone has raised hand, probably Shalika, you can allow them to speak now. Shalika, you are... Okay. Mahesha, you can put your question.
Thank you, Bhante. Now, it's a very important topic that we have discussed today about speech. And I would say right speech, but you know, as the way that we were brought up, and you know, in schools we were allowed to, you know, do all those speeches, and then you know, be socialized, and when you go to a place, unless you talk, you won't be, you know, considered as a socialized person, and all sorts of things. So now we realize that. Clearly that speech is the dangerous thing which collects lots of demerits in life, and that's why we learned in mindful practice that noble silence is the best, and which I quite completely agree. So having said that, to move on with the day-to-day things, we have to speak with the people in the house or at work. And sometimes we cannot actually avoid staying, you know, breaking the rules of, you know, being only stay with the right speech. So we have to do the wrong speech that you have explained before. And it's depending on the circumstances we have to do it sometimes. And then we regret for it. Now, for example, if you talk to someone, who is asking for help, would say, you know, we tell all those things, okay, you can do like this, so we explain the options, and sometimes we regret, and, you know, I wouldn't have to say that, because that person would have worked out it, because I shouldn't say things like that, because then it's, you know, not right speech for me, and then later realize, okay, next time I will not do it, so I teaching a lesson to me again, consoling my mind, I wouldn't have done that, but I still did it, I will not do next time. So like that. So my question is, Bhante, actually, how we can, if in case that we didn't do the right speech, and then how can we make ourselves correct? First question. The second thing is, how can we, like, pardon or, you know, erase that?
Yeah.
Is there a way to that, or... we just have to forget about it and move on with the rest or the face the circumstances.
That's a good question. So basically, Buddha have included that corrective aspect as well. Say, for example, now for monks, there's a very beautiful practice included. So that is some sort of a confession. Say, suppose you felt that I did a mistake. I did a kind of a wrong speech. I mistakenly lied. So I mistakenly did something wrong. So if you later understood that I did a mistake, so you can go to the same person and you can actually apologize for that. So honestly, you have to apologize that person. So I'm sorry that I did this thing. I didn't really meant it, but anyway, I feel sort of that I did a mistake. So likewise, if we are back down to earth, so actually we can do that. So that is one aspect. And Buddha actually have further generalized it. And here you don't, and probably if you found that you can't go to that person, rather you can go to another person and you can confess. I did something wrong mistakenly, so I feel sort of regretted. And now I like to confess. So this is called the Apatti Desana in Dhamma, where you go to another monk and you do this confession. And then the other party, the other side, other monk, say that you got to, improve your morality. You got to further, somewhat responsible of what you are doing. So therefore, don't do it again. So that kind of an advice is given. Ayatim bhante sangvareyata. So likewise, there the other person will tell you, so don't do the same mistake again. So this is a kind of a corrective measure mentioned in the Dhamma. Say you are trying to correct yourself in a proper manner. So Buddha mentioned now recognizing one's own fault and then confessing it and then deciding and taking the corrective measures not to do the same mistake again is the goal or the progress in the Dhamma. So we know that we all start from very, basic levels, that we still have a lot of, shortcomings. So we are actually growing ourselves by practicing, by training. Actually, we are growing. So we are further and further refining ourselves. We are improving ourselves. And we are trying to become more and more good human beings. So that indicates that time to time we recognize our shortcomings. So that is, we can take positively, okay, I noticed this shortcoming. I noticed this fault. I noticed this wrong, mistake I have. So that noticing side is a very good thing, because otherwise we are continuing with that problem, or we are continuing with that shortcoming, and we have to taking it to the another life. Rather, if we are able to notice our shortcomings in this very life and we have the capacity to correct it, so they are, rather than hiding it, so it is always better to go approach that person or to another person and confess it and try to correct it. And therefore, we have to have some sort of a self-compassion as well. So we can't be extremely self-critical and do it. Rather, we also have to admit that I am not a arahant. I also still have sort of shortcomings. So whenever I notice that shortcoming, so I am being self-compassionate to myself, but not allowing it to continue. Rather, you go to another person and another, teacher or whoever, Kalyana Mitta, and you go to that person and you say, I did this and that. So and then the other party, of course, will tell, please don't do it. And then he may give some sort of an encouragement to put it yourself in the correct side. So therefore, this corrective measure and recognizing one's own mistakes is one important aspect of our growth in the Dhamma.
Thank you, Bhante. It's very clear. Can I ask another question, please?
Yes.
Now, this is actually my personal experience. I keep on, doing the practice each day and, trying my best to, be within the right way of, thinking and right way of actions and everything. Try my best. Sometimes successful, sometimes not. Now, one thing I realized is these days, which is actually keeping, I try to work out is, I like talking with people over the phone, especially, asking people, how do you go now, because it's lockdown and this and that. And And actually, it becomes like a comforting myself, like, because I try to, you know, talk less as much as I can. But when I get a chance, like, oh, I couldn't, you know, talk to this person for a while, like a few weeks, and man, I can take a chance to talk to that person. And then it's really like crazy. My mind goes again, saying, oh, if you get that phone call, now you're going to break your right speech. And you never know that what things you will talk. Definitely you will not talk with things. And you shouldn't do it. So like that, my mind again telling me. And then again, I should like, oh no, I should comfort myself at least once a day. And really get a really a motive to, you know, I desperately must take the call and talk all those stuff. And then sometimes I try to, you know, control and did it. Some days couldn't. And then I take the call, talk all sorts of things. And then finally I think, oh, I shouldn't take that call. Why I did that? Like that. So can you tell me a strategy that how can I stop that mind with my mind that is motivating me to take calls to this person, that person? I know it's useless, but sometimes it's like, you know, that some people says when you get worried, like you eat comfort eating. So you get like you eat sweets or biscuits or things like towards the daytime rather than taking your main meals. That actually a sickness in terms of people need to take treatment for that. Now, like that, I got kind of like, I feel like it's similar to that, eating disorder. Like that, I feel like getting a call to someone and, you know, just chat something and put the phone and then regretting about it.
Yes.
Getting that. So I think I feel like I need some kind of a remedy, you know, when I get something to mind. If I have something else that I would have replaced and then distract myself from that.
Yes.
But I couldn't figure out what I should touch at that moment to, you know, get off with that thought. So if you can give me some strategies, I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. So actually, that is the kind of a motive we have. So we all have some sort of an urge to do something. So in the Vipassana, we recognize that kind of an urge we have. Say when you are continuously practicing, and when you recognize the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and unself characteristics, slowly the mind will let go of even the object, and then mind starts to enjoy some sort of a seclusion. But we can't maintain such seclusion because of this kind of a urge, because of this kind of a doing syndrome. So we always want to do something, either physically or either, say, verbally, we want to do something, or else we have to think something. So this is a kind of a urge that we all have. So nowadays it is quite critical. And previously, actually, in the good old days, people are quite peaceful and they have less activities, and they actually have a lot of fairly peaceful lives. Now our lives are quite complicated. We have so many obligations, so many complicated relationships, so many commitments, and our lives become really complicated, very complex. But with say mindfulness practice, especially the Vipassana practice, we recognize what is necessary and what is unnecessary. What are the parts that unnecessarily I have involved with? As you have correctly mentioned, sometimes we understand, okay, I have done an unnecessary speech. I should not have called him. I should not have called her. So likewise, we feel it. So that is a recognition of our mistake. It is not harmful. Rather, this is the corrective measure that we are now having. Previously, we were not having such kind of a recognition. We rather continue that for a long time. But now, at least after doing it, we regret. After doing it, we recognize the mistake. So that is why Buddha mentioned to Venerable Rahula, so whenever you do something, just before implementing it, just before doing it, do a kind of a reflection. Is it useful to myself or is it useful to the other person? So you do this kind of a, before you implementing it, you do this kind of a contemplation, reflection. If you feel that it is not beneficial to you and not beneficial to the other person, then don't do it. Suppose you got the answer, yes, it is beneficial to me, it is beneficial to the other person, okay, you can implement it. And Buddha not stop there, Buddha ask, even when you are continuing doing it, in the middle of implementation, they also Buddha ask, again you reflect, is it what I am doing currently, is it beneficial to me or beneficial to the other person? While on the way you are asking, you are reflecting. And if you feel it is yes, it is beneficial to the other party as well, then you continue. In the middle, suppose you understood, no, it is not beneficial. It is not beneficial to the other party either. Then please stop it. And then, suppose you are completed the task. At the end of the task, also Buddha asked to reflect. What I did, is it useful to me or is it useful to the other person? If the answer comes as yes, then no harm, no problem. On the other hand, if the answer comes like no, what I did is not useful, what I did is not useful to the both parties, then don't do it again. So basically, likewise, Buddha asks us to do kind of a corrective mechanism in ourselves, because this urge coming in our mind is so powerful. Sometimes we can't stop it. We immediately go and implement it. We couldn't apply the brakes. So that is why again and again Buddha asks us to reflect. Either at the beginning, if it is possible, do that reflection. Either in the middle, during the implementation, do that reflection. Or at least at the end, do that reflection and measure whether you did is what you did is correct or wrong. So likewise, it's a kind of a refinement in our lives. So slowly, actually, we will understand, okay, certain deeds or words or speak are there which are useful and which are not useful. So likewise, you are removing or avoiding what is unused or not useful, and you are only implementing the useful. So it's a kind of a gradual development, and as I mentioned, we can't immediately become perfect, but slowly we are understanding. Slowly we recognize, okay, these are the parts essential that I have to maintain, I have to implement, and these are the parts that are unnecessary, not essential, so those I can avoid. So likewise, so this kind of a refinement has to happen as a gradual evaluation process. So it is necessary to ourselves, so we can't immediately become perfect, rather again and again we are doing this reflection and correcting ourselves. And on the other hand, sometimes, so in order to maintain a relationship, so this kind of a communication is also necessary. So if you think that certain relationship is necessary to maintain, it has benefits to both sides, and it is your duty, then time to time having this kind of a communication is also necessary. Otherwise, the communication, if with the absence of communication, the relationship may get ruined, and the other party might have wrong understanding or misunderstanding, and you also might have misunderstanding. That is also possible because it's a long silence. But if you feel that kind of a friendship is necessary, so then time to time, I'm not telling that frequently, but time to time having a kind of a beneficial communication is also useful.
Thank you very much, Pantel.
Yeah.
Now I would like to invite Bhadra to ask your question. Thank you. You can unmute by yourself now.
Right. Swaminvansa, actually what Manjula's question is more or less similar to me, and you have given the answers. Only thing I want to tell you is that when I talk actually with people, and there is a tendency in me that to, you know, criticize all the situations, and but at the same time it comes to my mind, why are you doing this? Why are you criticizing? And systems, people, and the processes, everything, I tend to criticize, and at the same time the there is something in my mind says, why do you do that? But, you know, there's like a kind of an urge and the force is there to just talk. And I feel sometimes afterwards, oh, terrible. And sometimes it is very difficult when you try to meditate also that comes. And the other thing is that recently I start listening to our Dhamma Jiva Thero's Potapada Sutra and then all these things. Nothing comes to my mind, whatever realization. Rather, I remember all the singing things, the Dhamma Jiva Thero's jokes and all. When I'm meditating, it comes to my mind and I'm laughing at those things. And, you know, it's become like a hindrance at the moment. Sometimes I wonder whether how we can overcome that kind of one thing is that habit and that kind of a disturbing things come into your mind when you're meditating.
Yeah. So actually, actually, I myself have faced, I mean, not too much in the criticizing side, but as you mentioned, so if we did something wrong, like any kind of a mistake outside our, say, practice, so definitely we regret or we suffer during our practice. So that is what I have mentioned in earlier. So when we are into the practicing side, when we become real practitioners, honest practitioners, so our practice actually suffers when we do mistakes. Not during the practice session, but during the outside session, if we are not maintaining morality, so then during the practice session, actually we suffer. We understand, okay, there's too many distractions in the mind. Mind is not really concentrating. So the wisdom is not developing because I was not careful about my day-to-day activities or how I was say discussing with others or how I was communicating with others. So likewise, this aspect we have to take positively. So if we didn't have this kind of a sensitivity, so then we were continuing with that mistake. And probably even we even admire that, okay, I am such person, I always criticize. So this is how you are identifying yourself. But that is a big mistake. But on the other hand, now you understand that it's a mistake. So this is something that I have to correct. It's something not useful. Probably others may get hurt because of my critical analysis. So likewise, you become more and more sensitive and you are sort of now trying to more kind of honestly trying to correct yourself, and you got to implement it. I mean, no point of simply blaming yourself and criticizing yourself either. Rather, if you once you understand it, yes, no problem what to do. I mean, you understand, okay, this is a kind of an urge coming from me and it's so powerful. I have doing that for long, long time. That is why it was sort of ingrained. Now you have to go against this grain. You have to go against this current. So that is why the Dhamma, it is mentioned. So one is becoming Patisotaka. You are now going against the current. There's a habitual tendency that's always trying to pops up and to criticize another person, always trying to become the first or whatever it is. Now, on such situation, okay, now you recognize it. There's a kind of an urge coming from me that I want to speak out. I want to put my message across. I want to put my viewpoint. I want to put my idea. So in that way, so we actually be mindful about that urge. And there we have some sort of a choice, either to do it or to avoid it. Previously, we didn't have that choice. We simply put it. We simply implement it. So powerful. But now, at least, we have at least a little time to make a choice. Am I really necessary to speak out? Am I really necessary to interrupt this discussion? Or am I better allow things to happen? Just silent. Allow others to talk. Because sometimes, say for example, say someone else is discussing and another people are also asking questions. And at that time, probably we also feel, okay, I also should ask a question. I also put my idea. So sometimes it is a kind of a thought coming because of kind of a self-view. I also want to highlight myself. My presence has to be showed. I have to put my idea. So then only the others may notice that I am also here. I am also participating. So I have to show my importance. So this is a kind of a self-view we have. It's a kind of a safe, self-promoting idea that we have. So if we are able to understand that, then we can simply forgive ourselves. We can actually understand that tendency in ourselves. So rather than promoting it, okay, I calm down myself and let others talk, I can mindfully listen. So this mindful listening is a very beautiful activity where others are talking, you are mindfully, you are listening. So you can get a better perspective about the whole situation because you are very silently, mindfully, you are listening. Later, if you feel that if others are inviting you to put your, say, idea, or if you feel that this is good to highlight, then you can say, without trying to promote a self there, you can properly, diplomatically, you can put the, your idea. So that is how actually Buddha mentioned. So now you are careful about how you handle your speech. Previously, it is not like that. So immediately we speak out. But now we are carefully, I mean, it's a kind of an art. And again, we enjoy it. So when we are able to put our idea without criticizing another person, without hurting another person, and then they also appreciate it, the way that we are putting across our idea is very diplomatic. Then others also actually highlight, yes, it's a good idea. And I couldn't see that side. That's a very nice that you put it across. So likewise, because they were not hurt, and we are not challenging them. We are not challenging them. Rather, we are very nicely, we are diplomatically putting our idea as another alternative. It is not that we immediately try to crush another person and put our idea, but rather we are very diplomatically putting our idea. So that is a kind of a beautiful art in a way. And we are actually in that way, we are able to maintain the relationship, not to destroy the relationship, and we are not trying to highlight ourselves, rather we diplomatically put the whatever the idea we have. And if the others are trying to highlight another better idea, so we are ready to withdraw our idea either. That is also there. Yeah. So I feel this is a kind of a very beautiful way of communication. It is not that we are trying to highlight as a person, rather we are discussing various possibilities, and among these various possibilities, we are selecting the best possibility, best answer. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Papante, we have a few more questions came through chat.
Yeah.
One question is there a subtle difference between harsh speech and malicious speech?
Definitely, yeah. So malicious speech, especially mentioned as kind of a divisive speech, where people are quite in control, in unity, they are quite friendly, and that time you get a kind of a mean idea to divide them, to hurt them, either to get their attention to you and you become the better person than the other party, or you want to destroy their relationship. So that kind of a meanness, malicious feeling is there in the malicious speech. But on the other hand, harsh speech, say you still have the ill will, you are driven by ill will, it is not necessary to have two sides. Even to one party, you are blaming or criticizing or scolding, using some scarcism or something like that. So there is no division happens, but you are taking a particular person and really speaking out in a hurtful manner. Therefore, there's a kind of a difference.
There's another one related to singing. I usually start by singing songs related to Dhamma, such as Tanno Budunge, etc. But I find sometimes I also get dragged into singing other songs that I like. But my question is, does it fall under idle chatter? I know I have to let it go one day.
Yeah, so that is where we need to find our limits. Say, I mean, using music and enjoying music and keep yourself joyful is one side. That is also have some benefits. So when we know the limits, then we should be able to stop it. Say, suppose you understand, okay, it's going on, again and again, this mind is singing. Sometimes it's a kind of a chatter. It's a kind of a, say, noise going on in the mind. So how about having a completely silent mind? Silent mind is a really, say, still mind. It's like a completely clear, pure water. So that is the most, say, beautiful nature of the mind. So time to time, having such pure mind is quite useful, quite energizing. So in such situation, if you are able to stop completely singing, so or whatever the inner chatter, so that is good. So therefore, finding our limits is the important thing. Otherwise, I mean, if we say that you have to completely stop singing, there should not never be any kind of inner chatter. So it's also difficult. I mean, good to have, but difficult. But slowly, I mean, it is a kind of a gradual process. As we are enjoying more and more inner silence, so we start to enjoy that. So what happened typically is, so when we don't have any experience of inner silence, so we feel this inner chatter or inner singing is something beautiful, something enjoyable. So we tend to do that. But on the other hand, on one day, suppose that we are able to really enjoy the inner peace, understand its, say, depth or profoundness. So there we have kind of a tendency. How about again enjoying such inner peace? I was able to enjoy that, say, a couple of days ago. How about again having such state, complete silence available in the mind? Just touching such a deep inner silence. So you get some sort of a idea about that. Then more and more your mind get tendency towards dwelling in such silence. So that is where Buddha encouraged in such Nippapancha state. Actually, the Nippapancha is a synonym for Nibbana. Therefore, Buddha mentioned, if you are able to calm down yourself, if you are able to implement kind of a inner silence, stillness, so basically it is you are getting closer to the Nibbana. So the path to Nibbana is sort of so much going along with the seclusion of the mind, inner silence of the mind, and calmness or tranquility, clarity of the mind. So that is where the path. So we have to go in that direction slowly and without immediately cutting off all the things. Slowly we are refining ourselves and more dwelling in that side. So I think in that manner we can implement it. So I feel that I answered the question.
Thank you, Bhante. Actually, like you know, I have some sort of like a similar, you know, experience. I thought of, you know, just, you know, sharing, because I, you know, I love music and that is what I, you know, grew up with. And so sometimes, you know, like when I start like remembering these songs, I started like, you know, especially if I do meditation or like something that I have to concentrate. So I started basically fighting with me, like why I'm thinking, you know, thinking this about this song and try like to stop it. And then it become really tough. I see like, it is hard to like get rid of it. So what I did was like, you know, when it comes, I just mindfully look at it and, you know, I just, okay, you know, if you want to be there, you know, just let it be there. I was not fighting. And then eventually I started feeling that it's nicely like it goes to my, in my background. So I can, you know, really pay attention and doing whatever I'm doing mindfully. And then, you know, it's nicely, sometimes it goes away, sometimes it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, so that is actually like, probably you have heard about this sound of silence. So sound of silence is also a kind of inner singing going on. So it is not that purposely we are making it, generating it. So it is there. but not disturbing. So likewise, sometimes very soft kind of a melody may going on, but if we are trying to immediately crush it, then it is making kind of a stress, kind of a tension. But as you said, so recognizing it and in a way kind of forgiving yourself, so okay, what to do? So this fellow is used to do this, so I can't immediately cut it off. So let him slowly give it up. So but you are promoting another side, allowing him also to dwell in that side, but you promote yourself in the, say, rising and falling, or in breath and out breath, or paying attention to various feelings, so whatever it is. So you are slowly, you are promoting paying attention to that. So gradually, so your intention will be improved. What I mean is, your purposeful attention will grow, since that inner chatter and inner singing didn't get enough strength from the mind, it will start to fade away. So that is why typically it is mentioned Nirodha Nisitam. So, what you call Viveka Nisitam, Viraga Nisitam, Nirodha Nisitam, or Sangha Parinami. So that is how Buddha mentioned, as you develop your practice, slowly you allow things to happen rather than trying to crush it, rather than trying to subside it. You allow things to happen and allow them to naturally cease. So then it will not make any kind of a stress or tension, because you allow them to pop up and you allow them to be and you allow them to naturally cease. Then they are naturally dying. Then again they may not arise for a long time, and you are not even having any kind of a stress, tension happen because of that natural process. So that is the, actually in the long run, so this kind of an approach is much beneficial rather than immediately trying to stop the ongoing thing or crush the ongoing thing. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you so much. Now I would like to invite Pri to ask your question.
It was at night, Bhante.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Bhante, my question is, when we commit a kaya kama or vachi kama, the thought, we have to generate the thought first, not we have to, I mean, it's automatically generated. And does that mean we have already committed mano kama?
So basically, yeah, I understand your question. When it comes to manokamma, so there are three categories mentioned into the manokamma, that is michcha ditti covetousness, yeah, you have strong desire, and then strong ill will. So those are the typically mentioned manokamma, which is have the potential of giving back the fruits, or giving the karma potential is there. But on the other hand, assume that you simply have intention to lie, but they are, assume that you get to know that intention, you understood that intention and you are mindful about it. So I have a desire to lie, but after understanding that, suppose you stop it, you didn't do it, so then actually you didn't do any verbal karma. That is of course quite clear. But on the other hand, so we can't say that we did any kind of a mental karma, we accumulated mental karma, because it's a kind of a only at the middle. So it didn't really rooted in the mind. It didn't really had kind of a upper hand in the mind. It's a simply kind of a initial thought only, kind of an inception only. During that inception, we were able to interrupt and be mindful about it, and we are able to stop it, and we are able to let go of that without implementing it at all. So I therefore feel that it doesn't have the potential to, rather it doesn't come to the karma patha level. You know, typically it is mentioned, if you have to get the results, so whatever the kaya kamma, vachi kamma, mano kamma has to come to the kamma patha level, where it has to come to the very very potential, very some kind of a threshold level it has to reach. But here we are intercepting at a very early stage, so therefore it couldn't reach that level.
So do you mean that to become karma father, we have to keep on thinking about it, like proliferating it?
Could be, exactly, exactly. Suppose you are now, you are thinking, you are always sort of, mind is now occupied with that. So that indicates that you are come to the Kammapatha level. That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so suppose somebody is thinking of killing an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kept on thinking it, and then it became a Kammapatha.
Mm-hmm.
And then he committed the karma, killed the animal. And can we say that the earlier one, the Kammapatha of thinking of killing it, is more powerful than killing itself?
Yeah, there is such argument also, because probably you might have heard that in the Buddha's teaching.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because.
But I'm confused, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, that is why Manokamma is considered as so powerful than even Kaya Kamma and Vachi Kamma, because your mind is fairly polluted. So you are spending hours and hours, days and days polluted, in the mentally polluted. So that is more powerful.
Yeah.
Then suppose another person, he found an animal, he immediately got the desire to kill and immediately killed. So in that sense, the kaya kamma become prominent, maybe than even the mano kamma. But here, this person was planning, thinking and proliferating about killing for several months, and then he implemented it. So there the mano kamma is quite powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very clear. Very clear.
Okay.
Much merit bounty.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So that one, Sanmai. So I think we have come to the end of the session, and we have spent I think 1.5 hours discussing Dhamma and listening to Dhamma. So with that way, we are able to accumulate a lot of merits. Let's share these merits with all the living beings and all the past away relatives, and let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavataca amhehi kam sampadam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavataca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasatthaja bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasatthaja bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasatthaja bummattha deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you all for joining with us today. Thank you so much, Bhante, and so much peace to you.
Okay.
Teruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruvan Sarnai.